bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. North Korea has fired two projectiles into the South Sea off its east coast, according to a statement from South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. The statement said that the projectiles were fired Friday morning from near a city into the Sea of Japan. Friday's launch was the sixth such last month, with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un calling them a solemn warning over U.S.-South Korea joint military exercises that began this month. North Korea is banned from any ballistic missile activity under United Nations Security Council resolutions, but U.S. President Donald Trump has said that he has no problem with the missile test, saying that they cannot reach the United States. Israel has now been criticized for barring two U.S. lawmakers from entering the country, setting off a new round of controversy and the debate over the U.S. and the support for its ally in the Middle East. We get more from AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Israel says it will not allow Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib into the country because they back a boycott of Israel. They had planned to visit on a tour organized by a Palestinian organization.
They want to come here for a provocation.
Danny Ayalon, a former Israeli ambassador to the U.S., says the aim was destroying Israel's legitimacy. But Palestinian official Mustafa Barghouti says Israel's doing that itself.
They are afraid that these two congresswomen will expose to the world the horrible violations of human rights that are conducted against the Palestinian people.
Israel announced the move shortly after President Trump tweeted allowing the lawmakers in would show great weakness. Omar calls it an affront and an insult to democratic values. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And this is VOA News. Ethnic rebel forces in Myanmar killed at least 14 people Thursday and would appear to be coordinated attacks on an elite military college and other government targets in the country's north. That's according to a military spokesman. The armed groups have been fighting Myanmar's military for several decades for greater autonomy for ethnic minorities. The Confederation of Ethnic Forces, known as the Northern Alliance, claimed credit for the attacks. A statement from the military said the attackers used 107-millimeter rocket launchers in two of the five assaults. U.S. President Trump says he does not want to see China's government violently crack down on protesters in Hong Kong. Mr. Trump said Thursday afternoon that China's President Xi Jinping could solve the problem quickly by meeting with protest leaders.
But I think it wouldn't be a bad idea. I really believe if he sat down, they have a certain little leadership pool. If he sat down with that leadership pool, I'll bet he'd work something out very quickly. It really seems like things that could be worked out pretty easily.
China's ambassador to London warned Thursday that foreign forces should stop interfering with the internal Chinese matter. The U.S. and China are in the midst of a contentious drawn-out trade negotiation. Trump said Thursday that he still believes China wants to make a deal. Gibraltar has released the Iranian oil tanker detained by British Marines last month. Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder.
Thursday's release of the Grace One was expected. Its captain and three officers had already been set free. But hours before, the plot thickened when UK officials said the United States had applied to seize the Grace One, which appeared to scupper hopes of diffusing tensions. The Chief Justice of Gibraltar's Supreme Court said there was no US application before it, while Iran's ambassador to London said the US had been desperately trying to block the Grace One's release. EU nations have been trying to save Iran's nuclear deal with international powers. Washington has pulled out of the agreement, but Europe wants to keep it alive.
That is Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting. Most U.S. stocks made modest gains Thursday in trading and recovered a little of the ground lost in Wednesday's drastic decline. The S&P 500 advanced 0.25% from Thursday's open. The Dow rose 0.4%. The Nasdaq fell slightly. Analysts say that Thursday's encouraging report on retail sales reassured nervous investors. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's main opposition MDC says a protest scheduled for today, Friday, will go on despite a police prohibition.
As far as the MDC is concerned, it's now all systems go. We are definitely going to exercise our constitutional rights under Section 59. We're going to march in Harare. It's going to happen on Friday.
Meanwhile, human rights groups call for an investigation into alleged abduction and torture of some protest organizers. Kenyan police were deployed Thursday in a section of Nairobi as residents demanded to be recruited as census enumerators. And Sudan's protest leaders named a new prime minister.
The new prime minister is Dr. Abdullah Hamdok. He is an experienced expert in economy in developing countries, and he was demanded by the protesters for a long time as he refused before to serve the Shia regime in his last days.
That's reported now by Muhyiddin in Khartoum. The United Nations says Ebola orphans are on the rise in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, and a U.S. expert will discuss the benefits of a prosperous Africa. Those stories plus Samse Omale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, says its protest scheduled for today, Friday, will go on come what may. But the police issued a prohibition midnight Zimbabwe time Friday, saying anyone taking part in such demonstration will face the full wrath of the law. In a statement, National Police Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyanti said anyone who participates in the demonstration will do so in contravention of Section 2611 of the Public Order and Security Act. Daniel Molokeli, spokesperson for the MDC Alliance, says the MDC and its allies will exercise their constitutional right by demonstrating today, Friday.
As far as the MDC is concerned, it's now all systems go. We are definitely going to exercise our constitutional right under Section 59. We're going to march in Harare. It's going to happen on Friday.
What do you make of reports that authorities have intimidated or abducted and tortured some of your supporters or members ahead of the protest?
Yes, there are clear signs of panic and desperation within the regime. 2 days ago, the youth chairperson for Mofakose, one of the constituents in Harare, was abducted and beaten up. The torturers clearly told him that they were unhappy with him being one of the organizers of the Friday March. We also had another situation where a civil society activist was also abducted and beaten up, also being accused of organizing the Friday March. So it's seen as part of the intimidation strategy against the people of Zimbabwe.
As we spoke the last time, the Minister for Home Affairs, King Matema, has accused you people of being some alliance with some foreigners who he claims are there to support you to overthrow the government.
I need to make it clear that the MDC is a very peaceful party and we're a law-abiding party. So if there is anyone who is associated with the MDC who has got a criminal aspiration, we want to encourage the police to arrest them immediately. We are not working with any foreigners. We are working with the people of Zimbabwe who want to end their long suffering who want a people's government to be ushered in instead of this unpopular regime.
Your leader, Nelson Chamisa, said one of the purposes of this protest is to force the government to deal with the spiraling economic crisis in Zimbabwe. But why can't you just meet with the government if you have concerns about how the economic situation is going in the country?
Yeah, our premise is that the economy is reacting to the politics. So the real problem is not the economy, is the crisis of political legitimacy, where we have a disputed presidential election result, where we have a situation where we believe that Nelson Chamisa was the clear winner, and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which is highly compromised, tampered with the results of the presidential election, and that is our political belief. So the real reason why Zimbabwe is not going anywhere is because of political dispute, political instability. And so if the MDC was saying, unless and until all the stakeholders in the country will come together and agree on a transitional mechanism and agree on comprehensive reform before we have a free and fair election, then we will not move forward as a country.
Daniel, thank you very much for speaking with us.
You're welcome, my brother.
Daniel Mulukele is spokesperson for Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. The Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum has called for an investigation into the alleged abduction and torture of six organizers of today's protest. The group says Zimbabwe civil society groups condemned what they say is the violation of the human rights of the protest organizers. Both the United States and the United Kingdom have also expressed concern about the alleged abduction and torture ahead of the protest. Meanwhile, presidential spokesman Nick Mangwana says President Emmerson Mnangagwa does not support the violation of the rights of Zimbabwe citizens. Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum chairperson Tatiana Mokoko spoke to viewers Peter Clotty.
We are really concerned because I think in the last 48 hours, we have a count of about six people who have been abducted and tortured, and the majority of them have been left for dead. We have people who are in hospital nursing injuries that they picked up from being assaulted as they were being tortured. And we are basically looking at and being concerned about people's rights being violated.
Spokesman for President Emmerson Mnangagwa has said the abductions are not what the president stands for, and there's a need to investigate and arrest the culprits. What is your take on that?
We would really be happy if proper investigations were done. Can I just take you back to say when Itai Dzamara disappeared? It's nearly 5 years now. Investigations were supposed to happen, but up to now, those investigations have not brought out anything. Things just happen. We are told investigations are going to happen, but nothing happened. We would really welcome for investigations to happen and for us to know who is carrying out the abductions and the torturing of Zimbabwean citizens who are supposed to be protected by the Constitution.
Ms. Mokoko, so which organization should carry out this independent investigation into these alleged abductions and torture of those accused, supposedly, of organizing this protest Friday?
At the moment, I think that a lot of these people have also reported to the police. And I think it is within the mandate of the police for them to be able to investigate who is doing this.
Some civil society groups are calling on SADC, the African Union, the United Nations, and basically the international community to condemn what has been described as an unwarranted crackdown on civilians by the state.
Yes, we have said that as heads of coalitions, to say that SADC, African Union, the international community, and the United Nations need to condemn these actions. And I think it needs to happen before tomorrow, because we are basically saying for tomorrow, Zimbabweans have a right to demonstrate. And that right cannot be taken away from people by anyone. It's not a privilege that they are getting from government, but they are entitled to those rights because they are within the Constitution.
Tatiana Mokoko is chairperson of the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Harare. There was jubilation Thursday in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, after protest leaders nominated Abdullah Hamdok, a former UN official, as the first prime minister of the country's three-year transitional government. Sudan's protest groups and the ruling military council reached an outline power-sharing agreement on June 17. They will sign a declaration tomorrow tomorrow, Saturday, paving the way towards multi-party elections and civilian rule. Reporter Naba Mohideen in Khartoum says Sudanese welcomed the selection of Hamdok because he refused in 2017 to work as finance minister in the final days of former President Bashir's government.
The new prime minister is Dr. Abdullah Hamdok. He is an experienced expert in economy in developing countries, and he was demanded by the protesters for a long time as he refused before to serve al-Bashir regime in his last days.
So, as you said, the protesters demanded him. What do you mean, and what is the general reaction about his appointment?
Yes, actually, protesters demanded him as he's a technocrat not belonging to any political parties, and this is the Declaration of Freedom and Change that opposition has signed since December.
I'm hearing also that tomorrow, Saturday, the Military Council and the pro-democracy groups will sign an agreement or a declaration that will pave the way towards multi-party elections.
Yes, it's a signing of the agreement. It will be on the Saturday. The Military Council will share the power with the civilians in the level of the Sovereign Council and Ministers' Council. So it's the final agreement of the constitutional draft and the political draft. It will be one agreement that will lead the country till elections when the military will lead for 21 months and civilians will lead 18 months till the next elections.
Will this agreement also talk about the makeup of the cabinet?
Yes, the signing of the agreement will name the Sovereign Council, which is the cabinet, and the Ministers' Council and also the Legislative Council. Following the agreement, the ministers will be named and TMC will be resolved and the new government of Sudan will be named also.
Can we say now that maybe this is an end to protest in Sudan?
Yes, people at least felt relieved after months of protest and after 4 months of talks and ups and downs. So they expressed a victory and they think this is a step towards a settlement in Sudan and towards a sustainable and at least secure Sudan with the civilian government that they always demanded.
As you know, the U.S. government has imposed a travel ban on this former director of the National Security Services. How are people reacting?
Actually, people welcome the viral news about the former chief of security service being banned to enter U.S. because protesters felt frustrated when local papers were trying to promote that U.S. is supporting him to be in the Sovereign Council again. So protesters felt justice may be brought one day as the Western countries will not support anyone who was involved in crime against humanity. And this man especially has a long history with heading a very repressive security service used to defeat all of the regime opponents for decades. And regarding the demonstrations, over 100 of pro-democracy protesters were killed during his period. So protesters felt this step is an indicator from U.S. that it will support the democratic change in Sudan, as they kept assuring this approach for a long time.
Naba, thank you very much for speaking with us, as always.
Thank you, James.
That was reporter Naba Mohideen speaking with us from Sudan's capital, Khartoum. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, August 16, Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Chaos erupted Thursday in the Kangeme area of Kenya's capital, Nairobi, after a group of residents staged demonstrations demanding to be recruited as census enumerators. The protesters said the officers chosen to conduct the census do not reside in the area as required by law. Meanwhile, the intersex group says it should be recognized and included in the census. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya becomes the first country in Africa and second in the world to have the intersex gender on the census list.
The chaotic residents of Kangemi area, Nairobi City, yesterday Thursday stormed a training center where the census officials were being taken through the census process that is due in 1 week's time. The police were forced to lob tear gas canisters to disperse the crowd that had surrounded the training center, claiming that the trainees were not residents from the area. They said if the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics does not consider the area people, they will paralyze the counting process in the area come next week. week. Even if they throw tear gas at us, we are going to defend the rights of our youth. The youth must be included in the census officers. I will not be counted, neither will I open my door. Let them tear gas us. Census in Kenya take place after every 10 years. The area member of parliament, Tim Wanyonyi, who went to calm the situation, asked the government to ensure the exercise is carried out by area residents or else the exercise may not take place.
Census are beginning next week. And if they don't address it today, then there will be no census in this area.
This year's census is marred with a lot of differences arising from Kenyans and civil societies. The Intersex Society of Kenya claims their sex status must be included in the counting list. James Karanja, who grew up as a female and later developed male characteristics at a teenage, told a local Kenyan television, KTN News, that the inclusion of the intersex status in the census exercise will make most of the people accepted in the society.
Looking at the data we have as an organization, I think 80% of us, including me, we've been raised by single mothers because our fathers ran away. They could not believe, you know, having such kind of a child.
Most of the intersex children do not get birth certificates before the surgery is conducted on them to identify the exact gender. Nganga Mbage, Chair Law Reform Commission of Kenya, said that the intersex people should be accommodated in all the identification documents in the country.
The Constitution affords protection to people of all races, of all gender, sex, and so on. And therefore, what we need is to actualize these rights in our day-to-day life.
Intersex people are born with sex characteristics such as chromosomes, gonads, or genitals that, according to the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, do not fit typical binary notions of male or female bodies. The first ever intersex birth certificate was issued in America. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says the number of children orphaned by Ebola or separated from their parents because of the disease in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has more than doubled since April. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since the epidemic was declared more than 1 year ago, aid agencies have registered 1,380 children who have lost one or both parents to Ebola. During the same period, nearly 2,470 children have been separated from parents undergoing treatment for the disease or isolated because they have come in contact with an infected person. World Health Organization figures put the number of Ebola cases at 2,831, including nearly 1,900 deaths. UNICEF spokeswoman Marixi Mercado says more children are getting sick and dying in this epidemic than in previous ones.
In this epidemic, about 30% of the cases are among children, whereas in previous epidemics, the proportion was about 20%. As of the 4th of August, there were 787 children below 18 who were infected with Ebola, and there had been 527 deaths.
Mercado says the children are under enormous stress and need extensive physical, psychosocial, and social care. Given the more than doubling of children in need, she says these specialized services must be urgently scaled up, especially in Beni, where the largest number of children are affected.
For children with no surviving parents, the needs are longer term. The teams work to place children with relatives or foster families, which is not easy given the economic burden of raising extra children and the fear of catching the disease or being associated with it. It often requires delicate mediation as well as financial support for food, school fees, and other basic necessities.
The UNICEF spokeswoman tells VOA the work being done by psychosocial assistance is critical because stigma against Ebola orphans is pervasive. She says children who have been in contact with someone infected with the virus often are rejected by families and communities who believe they will become sick. This, she says, is when social workers step in to convince these people they have nothing to fear and that providing loving care for the children will help them thrive. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A United States governor was in Togo this week, where he touted the potential benefits of what he called Prosper Africa. Joel Devilment, director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the program and how it might benefit Africans.
Prosper Africa is trying to solve a problem that has existed for a long time, which is that if an American company wants to invest in Africa, it's very difficult to navigate the U.S. bureaucracy to access risk, insurance, any sort of credit, to leverage U.S. officials. And so what Prosper Africa is doing, it's essentially, it's a coordination mechanism. It's allowing a U.S. business to access all of the things that the U.S. government wants to provide to help facilitate trade. I think it's a welcomed reform. It's really a back-of-the-house reform, but long overdue.
The governor of Mississippi visited Togo this week and announced that Togo would be a pilot country of this program. Do we have any more details about what that actually means for Togo?
No, I'm trying to figure it out myself. I was not aware that they were going to announce pilot programs. The governor's statement caught me by surprise as well. There are certainly going to be countries that are going to be more attractive to U.S. companies that almost inevitably the U.S. government will work harder on to try to open up that market.
Togo wouldn't have been my guess as one of those countries.
No, and that's why I think that this is a little bit premature for this statement by the governor, and I'd like to learn more about it.
That was Joel Devilment, director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington, D.C. Minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa's Post. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Dakar, Senegal, where host Senegal booked a date with Mozambique in the semifinals scheduled for Friday at the ongoing FIBA Women's AfroBasket 2019 Championship at the magnificent Dakar Arena after beating Angola by 88 to 54 points on Thursday. Astau Tarouri dropped a game-high 16 points against Angola to guide Senegal to a third consecutive Final Four at the Continental Showpiece as they continue seeking to attain their goal of winning the title at home. Defending champions Nigeria qualify for the semi-final stage after beating DR Congo 79-41 to face Mali in the semis. Sira Ogoke is Nigeria's De Tigress shooting forward.
It's a good mixture of young players, new players, veterans, a great coach and a great staff. You know, we're here to win. We don't take our opponents lightly. We're going to prepare for them with video. We're going to prepare for them with training as usual, knowing their sets. And we're going to go in there focused so that we can come out by God's grace as the victors at the end of the match.
Elsewhere, Mali dominated the West African Derby, urging Cote d'Ivoire 60-51 to maintain an unbeaten run in their competition, courtesy of Toti Gandaga, who netted 15 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists and 2 steals. Mali, Mozambique, Nigeria and Senegal have automatically qualified for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics pre-qualifying tournament that is scheduled to be played in November. In athletics news, South African athlete Caster Semenya has said that she has not felt supported by other women in sports. The double Olympic champion was at a women's conference in Johannesburg, which brings together women from different sectors of society to celebrate the Women's Month.
I think it comes more into the international stage where you see your own rivals. They come with this rude, you know, responses in terms of me, you know, competing against them, which for me is not a big deal, because what I know is that we are all athletes. You know, we should be supporting each other, whether you're losing or not.
Caster Semenya will not defend her 800 meters title at the World Championships in September. This follows a Swiss Federal Tribunal reversal on the ruling that temporarily lifted testosterone regulations imposed on her. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, says its protest scheduled for today, Friday, will go on come what may. But the police issued a prohibition midnight Zimbabwe time Friday, saying anyone taking part in such demonstration will face the full wrath of the law. Daniel Molokoki, spokesperson for the MDC Alliance, says the MDC and its allies will exercise their constitutional right by demonstrating today, Friday. And that is it for this Friday, August 16 edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States have also educated prominent Africans like the founding presidents of Nigeria, Ghana, and Malawi. The role of historically black colleges and universities on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.